It's Friday, October 6, 2017, and you're listening to episode 461 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 37 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Brodor.
And my name's Chad.
All right, so today's episode is going to be a short...
Shut up. I am hijacking the episode.
No, that's fine, but there is something I have to say first.
May or may not be the short one.
Okay, that's fine. And if it's not, then I'll just transplant this to the other episode. But this episode and or the next one, depending on how which one is which, is going to be a bit short, which is occurring because of the fact that we got thrown off of our recording schedule by a bunch of people having work issues, and I was going to do some makeup recordings with like some guest hosts or something, and then right as I was getting ready to do that, Carla got a phone call that her grandma, who was not in good shape, passed in a rather unpleasant fashion, and so now I'm dealing with family stuff and then the funeral and whatnot. So bear with us, but we're going to need a week or two to kind of get ourselves recentered and caught up. So that's why we're off our usual release schedule. Okay, so with that out of the way, just so our audience knows what's up, just so they know why things look a little weird.
Look a little weird, yes.
Look a little weird, look, yes.
On the audio podcast.
Precisely. Exactly. So, Chad, go ahead and...
Hijack away.
Hijack the episode.
Hijack ass this episode.
Okay, so...
Oh my, he's got a bag.
I do have a bag.
Says the Hobbit on it.
Well, the bag is pretty interesting. It's the J.R.R. Tolkien Hobbit 75th anniversary.
Isn't it the 80th anniversary?
Well, this is an old bag.
Oh, I was going to say, because I just saw it was the 80th. So, yeah, it's 5 years old.
Yeah, it's 5 year old bag. But the bag is not the point here.
Are you about to go on some diatribe about how those books are overread and underwritten?
No. Actually, I love the Hobbit. I love the Hobbit. I can go on about the Hobbit.
I don't even want to deal with this.
Do you remember how I hijacked an episode maybe a year or two ago, and I brought in a box set that I found at a garage sale?
It was amazing.
Yeah. It was amazing. So I go to garage sales, if people don't know, because I collect vinyl records. I also collect old weird cookbooks that may be interesting to me, that may not even have any good recipes, just interesting weird cookbooks.
Each time you buy one, do you run out of the garage sale yelling, "It's a cookbook," just to see who recognizes the reference?
I don't recognize the reference.
From Twilight Zone?
It's a cookbook! How to serve man!
How to serve man.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Here's what I do.
What I'm doing on Saturday.
Here's what I do at garage sales. Pork. I walk up to him and I say, "How much money are you going to give me to load my rape van full of your shit? Because your shit's in your driveway. You want to get rid of your shit. You do not want to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning putting bullshit price tags for 25 cents on your shit in your driveway to have grandma haggle you down for a nickel. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get my rape van. I'm going to pull up to your driveway. And I'm going to say, how much are you going to give me to cart away all this bullshit that you want to throw away?"
Huh?
Yeah.
So you don't go to main garage sales.
Not twice.
Right. He's running from the cops the rest of the day. I go
to a lot of garage sales.
He has Missouri's least specific restraining order of garage sales.
Yes.
It's like
Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, he just has to stay inside all day.
Yeah. Chris Hussey can't be within 100 yards of a school. Brodor can't be within 100 yards of a garage sale.
So,
I got a dead girl in my van that I'm going to bury with your shit. If you give me $20, I will take all this shit out of your driveway and I will bury that dead girl.
You done?
I think I'm okay.
Oh, okay.
I just needed to get that out.
Good. No,
it was a hijack.
I understand. Yeah. I get it.
So you went to a garage sale.
So anyway, I went to a garage sale, and to be honest with you, you don't really, or at least around here for some reason, you don't really find much geek nerd stuff at garage sales. I mean, you might find old video games or whatnot, but really not a hell of a lot. But I found this, and actually I found three things, and I'm going to take out the stupidest thing first, just because it doesn't have a whole lot in it. The follow-up, though, is that there are two really awesome things in it.
Okay.
So Dan, what did I just hand you?
He handed me, oh my gosh, okay, this is one of the official Advanced Dungeons & Dragons computer games for anyone that's familiar, this is one of the old SSI, Strategic Simulations Incorporated, video games. This was, this particular one, I played them on the Apple II, this 2C to be specific. This particular one is for the IBM and requires at least 640K of EGA, TGA, or VGA. And it comes on a high density 3.5 disc, even though there's 5 1/4 in here. I'm not sure how that works. Oh, it's, that's weird. It says 3.5. That's actually 5 1/4.
That is the lamest one because it has the least amount of stuff in it. This box of this video game, which
I'm sorry, it says also available on 3.5. So this is a 5 1/4. So this is one of the old floppy discs.
Right.
And it's actually got,
there's some stuff in there. There's like some catalogs.
Yeah, it doesn't have like the instruction manual. Mm-hmm. So this is not one of the actual gold box games.
I don't know if you said what it was. It was Shadow Sorcerer and Animated Adventure. I had never actually heard of that one, nor played it.
Well, and it's Dragonlance Art.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a dragon. Yeah.
That's Tika and Tanis and Lorana, et cetera.
Get off my show.
So this was $19.99 used back in the day.
At least Alias was showing tit. So, I mean,
there's not a whole hell of a lot in this box. There's this floppy.
Sweet Elmore Dragonlance art.
Yeah, there is that. There's a catalog to some of their other games, which is pretty interesting. There is.
Like you just started off.
Because I'm really disappointed by this box, right? Because you're going to find out why here.
What baffles me is please tell me.
This is a 90s. PC video game from Advanced Dungeons & Dragons.
Please tell me, because there's a price tag on here.
No, I did not pay. Okay. There's a dollar a piece for these.
Because there's a handwritten price tag on here that says used $19.99. And I'm like, if you paid $20 for a 5 1/4...
That's $20 in 1999 money.
Yeah, but my point being that even used, and I don't know, I would have paid for that back even in the day. Yeah, if you paid that in 2017 for something you don't even have a computer that can run.
$1.
Yeah. Because you would need a DOS box emulator, and you'd have to find somebody that has a USB 5 1/4 drive to even run this.
So this one is, I have to admit, very lame. These were filled with cool things. They were filled with booklets that contained stories and hints, and we're going to see that in a minute. This particular box didn't have any of that shit in it. It had been completely ransacked. But it does have a card in it. And this card, take a look at that, Dan.
Oh, this is one of the hint line things. Back before game FAQs and, the internet.
Right.
Get the hint. Help is only a phone call away. 1-900-737-HINT. This is probably a porn line by now.
Yeah, call it your own risk on that one.
Yeah, 95 cents for the first minute, 75 cents for each additional minute. This number's for hints only if you have other problems, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, this is what you call, if you're stuck in the game because you can't figure out a puzzle or something, then you call this and somebody just tells you. Now you go on the internet and people tell you what you're doing wrong for free.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, of your mother, too.
Yeah, you have to actually spend money to stop them.
Right.
Whereas here you had to spend money to start them.
The last four letters there, it's funny because in that modern day phone number, they only changed the first two. Now it's a porn line.
Yeah. 1-900, see you next Tuesday.
Correct. Okay. That was official Advanced Dungeons & Dragons computer project, Shadow Sorcerer and Animated Adventure. I never even heard of this. Okay.
Yeah, same here. So I played a lot of the
That's some BS
games.
That I literally wanted to get out of the way. In fact, I almost didn't buy that one, but I just did. Because it had the art and stuff in it. Now, are you ready for the gold?
Okay, let's see the gold.
Literal gold.
Okay, now we're to an actual gold box game.
Everything that came with this box is in there, including the receipts.
Okay, so what I'm holding now is the gold box video game.
Classic.
Let me give a history. For anyone who didn't play role-playing games back then or some of our audience wasn't alive back then, let me give you some history on this. All right, so back in the day, and we're talking
I think 1999.
Yeah.
98.
Oh, it's got to be earlier than that. Is that old? I would have guessed earlier than that. Okay, yeah, 1990. So this would have been
You're right. Yep.
Yeah, so this would have been produced in the late 80s. Okay, so what happened
And the guy bought the clue book, too.
All right, so let me give a bit of history here. One of the things that I think people maybe only partially appreciate is the amount of influence that Dungeons & Dragons and tabletop role-playing games in general had on video gaming. And you can still see that today. For example, you pull up the average MMO or any form of RPG, and what do you have? Well, you have things like hit points. You have stats. You have levels. You have skills. You know, you have all these things. You have gear that has stats. You have these, you know, random number generators to determine if you hit and how much damage you did. These are all concepts that came directly from tabletop role-playing games. What happened was, obviously, with these two groups overlapping, back in the day, you have people who are geeks playing tabletop role-playing games, and then along comes, you know, the same people who are also into computers, and probably many of them are software engineers and such, and so they start making video games, which at first was a very low-paying, very small operation. For example, the Atari game Adventure was done on by only one person, and also has the distinction of being the first video game with an Easter egg, because they would not let him put his name in the credits. There were no credits. Like, now you have 5 minutes of credits.
Are you a bad enough dude to save the president?
Yeah.
Yes, you were. And then game's over.
And now you have, like, all the localization teams.
Oh,
and,
my God. Yeah.
And it just goes on and on and on. But he put a hidden thing in there where you could find a secret room that had his name in it. About this time, so the mid-80s, the early 90s, is people that were into D&D got the rights to start making video games based specifically.
Did we say the name of the game?
Yeah.
Secret of the Silver Blades?
Yeah, Secret of the Silver Blades.
Okay.
Based specifically on Dungeons & Dragons. And the first company I'm aware of to do this, there might have been one before, but the first one I'm aware of, is Strategic Simulations Incorporated, or SSI. And they made a series of games that are now, as a group, known as the Gold Box games, because of the fact that they came in gold boxes. The box I'm holding in my hand right now is gold in color. And they based these, many of them, on either popular adventure modules, or they based them on novels. For example, Curse of the Azure Bonds, which was one of the Gold Box games, was based...
Pool of Radiance.
Was Another based one. On Azure Bonds. Yeah, Pool of Radiance. Video games nowadays, I mean, what do they come with? You have the game itself, probably a code you can put in for some extra whatnot, which is just their way of trying to discourage the secondhand market. You know, is only the first person to buy it gets the code to get the extra level.
And that's even if it's physical media.
Yeah, even if physical media at all. And you didn't, and that's it. And the game itself teaches you how to play it. There's typically very minimal controls.
There's definitely no 1-900 hint line.
Whereas back in the day, I mean, these games, they required a lot more investment to play. I mean, I guess it's kind of interesting because role-playing games have taken the same tact. Whereas, yeah, you still get these 300 and 400 page bullet-stopping role-playing games, but there's also a real market for games like Terrible or games like, you know, the Pocket
Lasers
Mod games.
Lasers and Feelings,
you know, or the Pocket Mod games like Stuart Robertson makes and such. It's very simple, rules light. And video games went kind of the same way, where when they first came out, I mean, sometimes you got these bullet-stopping instruction manuals that explained how the game worked, because there was so much intricacy to the game, because they didn't have all these people doing art and soundstage work and voice acting, and so it's not where the budget went. And so the game here, I mean, yeah, it's got an adventurer's journal.
Yeah, which is not the rule book, mind you. Nor is it the hint book that this person bought extra. The Adventurer's Journal, it's like a
setting primer.
Yeah. Imagine you buy a role-playing game, and it basically has a digest version of the role-playing game as an additional book. There's charts in here. There's maps of different stuff. It also has these what are called journal entries in it, and they're numbered. And they have lots of text, and they have some artwork on them, on some of them. There's so little room in these old games that you don't have hard drives. Everything's on a disc. The discs are really tiny. So instead of wasting all that space on the game with text of the description of the inn that you walk into that has all these people, It'll just say you walk into an inn, turn to your adventurer's journal, journal number 59, the tale of the wounded warrior. And then there's like a paragraph here of whatever reference this 59 is this guy telling you the tale of the wounded warrior. But the front of it, like it has the spell list cribbed right out of the dungeon or the Dungeons & Dragons manuals. It has monsters and their descriptions. It has tips on magic spells. You can take this adventurer's journal and you can run a tabletop D&D game with it. If Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Secret of the Silver Blades, which I actually haven't played, was gold.
Yeah.
I have the gold mine in here. The contents of this next box are amazing. And Dan, you are going to take a trip down memory lane.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. Okay, so Broder, you may put this in your spank bank. So this...
That's been in my spank bank since childhood.
Okay, it's probably been in a lot of spank banks since childhood. Sorry. What I'm looking at is Curse of the Azurbonds, which is the game we mentioned before.
A classic.
Yeah, which has, by the way, a terrible GMing technique.
Because, boobs.
Well, no, not that. I'm fine with boobs. But it was based on the novel... Azurbonds. I believe it was a novel, not in a module. I think it was I don't know. Is there a novel or a module? I think a novel. And Azurbonds starts off with the party is stuck in the middle of nowhere, has none of their gears.
Pass out. You wake up. You have magic curse tattoos on you that compel you to do whatever the game master tells you whenever he wants. You can't get rid of them. Even a wish doesn't work. Go.
Yeah. And
I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go out the door.
Yeah. Total railroad. You don't even have your gear. They've taken away all your gear. Basically, it's a reboot with you on a total railroad. Now, having said that, while I think it would make a terrible tabletop game, for a video game premise, where especially you're talking about, you know, computers back in the day that didn't have the ability to handle these huge branching plot lines, it was a good video game, and I thoroughly enjoyed this video game and beat this video game. Now, on the top of the...
I was killed by Displacer Beasts.
Well, there was that Beholder fight, too, that I recall, where if you didn't come in...
It was like a fifth-level adventure, and they put you up against a Beholder.
Yeah, this
like
was a jerk. These games were merciless.
Yeah.
You know, people nowadays are all like, oh, I'm going to go play, you know, Dark Souls or something. It's like, son, you have no idea. You have no idea what you don't even know. But on the cover of this is two characters. One is a redhead.
One is the right boob, and one's the left boob, and then there's some other people.
Apart from the 1980s Larry Elmore or whatever hairdo, there's a really hot redhead chick on the cover of it whose name is Alias. And then I forget, there's a Saurian. It's like not a lizard man. It's like intelligent and more intelligent, and it's like good line, and it's extra planar. I forget all of its story, but it's this other thingy that apparently accompanies her in the book or something, and nobody cares about that. It's, I mean, honestly, if you even look at it, it's kind of got a Baroque art style, and she is self-lit. Everything else is just kind of in the darkness. She is self-lit.
Yeah, this picture is amazing because she is wearing chainmail with literally a peekaboo cleavage.
Yeah.
Dan, you passed up the most awesome thing.
Oh my gosh.
In here.
Okay. So copy protection. So back in the day, they didn't have, you know, game codes because once again, you couldn't go on the internet to register these codes. Mm-hmm. And so for copy protection, because there was literally nothing that stopped you from taking the game floppy disk.
And copying them, just like this guy did.
Yeah, like this guy did. He's got, there's like 6 or 8 copies of the game in here.
I literally did not buy the original discs. I bought copies of the discs.
Yeah, there's tons of them in here, so he apparently made copies for a lot of people. But what they would do for copy protection is they would oftentimes include a physical object that was used to play the game. Now, sometimes that was the instruction manual. Mm-hmm. They'd say, turn to like page 48, what is the second sentence of the third paragraph?
Right.
And you would type that in order to continue the game. But so what this one had is it has a wheel. So there's two wheels. There's a circle, like an outer wheel, and then there's an inner wheel. And so it will give you two runes. Okay. So it'd be like, match this out.
They're elven and dwarven.
Right. So it'll give you an elven rune or sigil or whatever they're called, and then a dwarven one. And when you match them up, there's like holes punched throughout the some of the wheel. Okay. So if you match like this sigil with this rune, all right, and then it'll say like, okay, so what's number two off of that? So then you look to the hole number two that reveals, in this case, it's the letter I. And so I would be the code to get.
And the cool thing about that disc is you can actually translate Elven, Dwarven, English, and you can make words out of them.
Yeah, and actually, as I'm turning here, they have things like Odiug,
yeah,
Nixie, Resist, Slimes, Trolls.
Yep, that's actually a translation wheel that is functional.
Oh, yeah, no, this was a Forgotten Realms one.
Yeah,
it's the
Forgotten Realms Dwarven, yeah, runes. I can tell that
because it says translate from Deathic,
yep,
and then translate from Espruer. Now, for anyone who's not a big Forgotten Realms fan, Deathic is the ancient Dwarven language. It's like Dwarven, yep, Latin, and Espruer is the Elven Latin. It's like they're, and the human one is Thoras.
And
so
those sigils on there are actually from the game.
Yeah.
From the tabletop game.
It is. That's correct. Yeah, I actually have the second edition Forgotten Realms box set that has the
Espruer,
Deathic, and Thoras alphabets.
Yeah, and you can use that wheel as a translation wheel for the writings that are in the tabletop game.
The only thing I do wonder about, though, here is in the Spank Bank picture of Alias, or Elias, or however you want to pronounce it.
The novel Azure Bonds finds Alias, blah, 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 blah.
On the left arm, she's got tracks. Like, look at that vein. I think she does heroin.
Or maybe she did.
Maybe she did.
This is 1989, by the way.
Yeah, look at the vein on that left arm.
High fantasy combat drugs, that's all.
Right. Okay. It's all good.
The game master told her to do it. She was compelled.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
One of the bonds
had to do it.
Was like, because the bonds disappeared when you completed tasks to undo the curse. And I think it was 8 bonds. So maybe like one of them was like, you have to shoot heroin. And that's how you get rid of like the open hand bond or something. I don't know. But yeah, this one's 1989.
So if you notice that the crappy box that didn't have a lot of stuff in it is 1990. And then the middle box, Secret of the Silver Blades, was 1990-91. And it had less stuff than Curse the Azure Bonds, which was 1989. So as they went on, they had less and less stuff in them.
This person was a smoker, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
It was the 80s in Missouri.
Everybody was a smoker. Well, and like this, I was talking about...
I was a smoker in the 80s.
Well, I was talking earlier about the difficulty of these games. Right here on the back, one of the selling points is twice as deadly as Pool of Radiance.
Right. Right.
And these games were not merciful to begin with.
No, they were brutal.
It displays from other computers may vary. IBM is registered, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, what do they have system requirements on here? That's my next.
Oh, yeah. There's a pamphlet inside.
Oh, it has
a blue.
Oh, inside.
Inside.
So
you
get it home and then get to discover if you can play it.
Right. So
to transfer characters to Hills Far.
So that was another thing.
This was a new to Mass Effect. Yeah, transfer characters in from Pool of Radiance, and if you beat this game, here's how you transfer your party out to the next game, which is Hillsfar.
Yeah, that was the thing. I mean, 1989, they were doing that.
And that
was like modern games like Mass Effect, it's this cool, awesome thing, man. It's so crazy. It's so innovative. You can transfer your characters to the sequel games that you made. It's like, yeah, we had that in the 80s. It was cool. We just didn't have the, graphics and stuff. But Dan, this one comes with 2 receipts.
Okay, so we got Babbage's Software, which I don't remember who got bought out by it. It got absorbed and absorbed and absorbed. So Babbage's Software from South County Center. Curse of the Azure Bonds, $37.46, 1989, once again. He bought it on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
He bought it on my 14th birthday in 1990. The Curse...
Yeah, because I remember seeing that. I didn't make the connection with your birthday, but I was like, so I know what this guy's doing for Halloween. He's playing video games.
Yeah, not answering the door. It's a good plan.
That's right.
That's what I do every year is turn off the outside light. And now Carla does that. Not turn off the outside light. She actually answers and hands out candy. All right, so I have this plan for Halloween where I want to get like an arm length monster glove. Mm-hmm. And when kids, like little kids, knock on the door, just open it enough to reach out with that glove and just
drop the candy
and then pull That's it back awesome. In, close the door, and just watch hilarity ensue and put it on YouTube. But all right, so the IBM PC version of Curse the Azure Bonds, by the way, it used to be when you walked into a computer store,
it was Acres of Apple around here.
Well, they'd have sections. So like you'd walk into a computer store and be like, this wall is IBM, this wall is Apple, this wall is Commodore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have to see, not only do they have your game, but do they have your game for your system? So I guess it's not too different from how it is nowadays with like Xbox versus PlayStation versus Nintendo. But you'd like go into a mall and there'd be, you know, a four-walled, mm-hmm. you know, store. Like today you'd see a clothing store or whatever. Well, I said each wall would be a different computer system. And so you'd have to go to the wall for the computer you own and then see what they've got. So, okay, Azure Bonds, $37.46. The Clue Book, $11. And then he bought a 10-pack Maxell discs, 3.5, so it doesn't say what size.
Which is interesting because all the copies are Scotch discs.
This must have been for he was stealing something else.
Yeah.
And
he didn't know if he wanted to steal this one yet.
That was
here's the Maxell disc.
Oh, there we go. Maxell, yeah. Like I say, yeah, it is a 3.5 floppy, and $13. So all total on this trip, he spent about, 64 roundup, because the sun's $65. So
in 1989 money.
He spent, let's say, $100.
Yeah, he's a nerd who was making money. Good for him.
So Curse the Azure Bonds, the Clue Book, and then a box of blank discs. He spent about $100.
Mm.
This is timeless. I mean, it holds up.
I like the content of it. I really,
you know, I want to make her my new phone background.
I really like
the wheel. Remember this wheel.
And
I think it would give you 3 or 4 in a row. Like you'd have to go from like this combination of symbols to that combination of symbols to give you a couple in a row just to make sure you weren't guessing off the keyboard.
And these video games for the age I was.
And this, the back right here. Yeah. Okay. So you can see. All right. So there's a map on the back of this of the Dale Lands. So for anyone who knows Forgotten Realms, pre-Time of Troubles, there's a map on the back of the Dale Lands just north of Sembio. Okay, so for this, if you're not in Forgotten Realms, this means nothing to you, but it's an area in there. And right here, there's the Standing Stone. My preferred D&D campaign I keep trying to run and keeps getting torpedoed is set.
I've never torpedoed any of your games.
I know. I'm not blaming you. I'm stating a fact. There's no blame here to anyone on the mics. There is within the podcast, but not to anyone on the mics. But this is where I always set my campaign. Mm. And the reason I picked this area, and of course, they didn't stick to this, but when they shipped out the second edition box sets, they said, because we want you to be able to tell your own stories, here's a list of locations in the Forgotten Realms we will never develop. Mm. We will never write books about them. We'll never write source books about them, apart from real high-level stuff of a couple paragraphs just to give you some plot hooks for
the
cities.
This is a forest. There's a big stone.
Yeah. This is kind of, this city is big into merchanting across the waterways. That's about as much as it tells you. And they said, so if you want to write your own stuff, this is where you ought to set it. Now, of course, they didn't stick to that, but Sembia and the areas to the north of it was one of those, which is why I took a shine to running all of my Forgotten Realm campaigns in Sembia, which only got reinforced by playing the gold box games like Curse of the Azure Bonds, which takes place in and around that area. And it deals with like the cults of Bane or whoever the dark god was. It deals with all the cults of. Oh, what was the trash god in the Forgotten Realms? Moander. You remembered a proper noun.
Do you know why I remembered it?
No.
Because I just read about him in the adventure book.
Because, Moander's your spank bank.
Yeah.
But it dealt with the cult of Moander.
That and Tyr, the guy who's only got one hand.
Yeah.
Stump just right to the elbow.
But, yeah, Moander, he was like this trash god, like all like the shambling mounds and such worship. Yeah, I guess he wasn't a god. He was like some kind of greater power. I don't know.
You know, I almost wish that we had something where we could play these, because
there's got to still be USB 5.25 drives and suddenly get DOS box.
we had an Apple 2GS. We had 2 5.25 disk drives and 2 3.25 disk drives. My dad didn't know anything about computers, just knew that you should get a computer because reasons. And then he just made it rain at the Apple store. And I even had a color monitor.
It worked out great. Chad was able to play Keith the Thief.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. Keith the Thief is amazing.
To this day.
Oh, I didn't get further than 5 feet into the game. So goddamn brutal.
Well, it is brutal. But every time somebody talks about a game being roguelike.
Yeah.
Or refers to the game Thief, which is an unrelated game.
Yeah.
I always, like, my first lizard brain response is I think they're talking about Keith the Thief.
Right.
And I have to process, like, oh, yeah, it's not 30 years ago.
Yeah. And this is one of those, this is not a popular, famous game.
No.
This is
not a Bard's Tale.
Right, or right. Whatever. Not Pool of Radiance or Curse the Everybody. This is going to be like, there are, of all of our listeners who are going to listen to this thing, like, 3 of them are going to say, oh my God, I love that game. And probably 1.5 of them is going to actually mistake it for a different game. So yeah, garage sale, fine. $1 a piece. And
it's a piece of gaming history. Yeah. I cannot stress that. I mean, if you don't like museums, maybe this was of no interest to you, or maybe.
I'm not sorry.
I know. I'm not sorry in the least, but this is the history.
I've got a nicotine buzz. Are you kidding?
This is the history of your hobby. This is where it came from. I mean, what you have today, this is part of the trek there. So, Chad, thank you for picking that up. I know it's only $3, but still, yeah. Thanks for picking that up.
I do think the one, the Shadow of Sorcerer, that was not worth $1. That was kind of lame. But I couldn't not pick them up.
Yeah.
They were there. So, I did not buy because I'm not into it. I also saw, like, a mid-80s or 90s box, a tote box at a different garage sale that was filled with Advanced Squad Leader stuff.
You know what I'm going to do?
The 10 billion chit, huge maps. There were like 8 box sets. There was stuff with helicopters on it. There was stuff with tanks on. There was stuff with guys with guns on.
These people not know how eBay works?
I guess not. And I was like, I don't even want to get into the buying stuff at a garage sale and then reselling it. I find amusing stuff like these games. Vinyl records, which I love for the music, and cookbooks because I like to cook. And also gross people out with crazy 60s gross gelatin dessert pictures and stuff with like tuna fish in it and tomato flavor. Oh my God, dude, you don't even know. It's so, oh, people, what is with people in the 50s? I mean, they smoked so much they couldn't taste anything. So they ate like herring-filled tomato-flavored jello smothered with mayonnaise and pinto beans. Advanced Squad Leader. But yeah, I looked at this box of Advanced Squad Leader stuff, and I'm like, I mean, it's all in great condition. I'm like, I don't know anything about ASL.
Age, sex, location.
I know nothing about age, sex, location. But I'm like, this has got to be worth something. And I was like, should I ask? It didn't have a price tag on it. I bet I could get like $1 or $2 out of them because everything else they were selling was like $1 or $2. But I'm like, this is a dark road. This is a dark road of going to a lot of garage sales, finding a lot of niche stuff, and getting an eBay account. And it's a dark road I don't want to go down. So yeah. I walked away.
You know, I think I am going to do those because I hope.
Don't point at her cleavage side boob and tell me about what you're going to do tonight after we leave.
No, I don't
want to know.
I'm not going to spank it to Ilias. What I think I ought to do, though, is for the sake of a new generation.
Yeah.
Because I can't update Curse the Azure Bonds. I don't have that technical skill or that amount of time. But I think what I can do for the new generation of gamers and for the people who made through this age is I'm going to find some cheesecake artist to make an updated cheesecake picture.
Not an 80s New York heroin club chic.
Precisely. We need an updated cheesecake picture of Alias. And I'm going to have a gold border around it. It's going to have a gold border.
Yeah.
May or may not have this random Sora Ron.
It needs to be Gnarl.
And he'll
the side character is Gnarl.
Yes, Gnarl will be over here.
It's Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes. Yeah. But we need to bring this character into the sexual imagination of a new generation, which is...
It's a heavy burden you're taking
it
on.
It is, but I'm willing to do this for all of you guys out
instead
there.
Of this, it's a heavy load.
Instead of this big castle keep in the background, it's just a picture of your house. The manor estate that you live in.
So, my brother's got a model that'll be perfect for that.
Like a human model?
No. So my brother did a commission. Sorry, Bob. My brother did a commission for a guy of this wizard's tower. Uh-huh. My brother's, I mean.
Oh, I thought you meant for aliens.
No. So he's brilliant when it comes to miniatures and terrain, and he did a commission for this guy for this guy's D&D game. And this tower, I mean, it was a dick if it was nothing.
I have that Little Mermaid cover.
I was like, are you going to paint veins on it? Like, what? What's the deal?
But did he look at you and he was like, whoa, what are you talking about? Or he's like, I'm going to put water stuff in it. And
rode him like a rented mule. I mean, it was brutal.
That's awesome.
I'm like, that's a tower. I mean, it was really cool on the inside.
I bet.
No, it was brilliant, but it looked like a penis.
A very brilliant, well-done penis tower.
I mean, huge.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're going to build a magic tower and make it look like a penis, why do a small one?
Elephants looked at that and they were like, damn, no thank you.
Right, I know.
All right, well, thank you guys for tuning in.
If you made it this far,
yeah. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
What is that?
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2017. Listeners are free to use this episode in any non-commercial endeavor so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the RPG Academy network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at therpgacademy.com/network.